This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 139 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, everybody? What's up, Tristan? 139, we got your boy.
Elliot Hulse is back in the house. So from 2016, Elliot was our most downloaded episode by a tenfold, and yeah. I think everyone just loves Elliot. His reach is unbelievable, his message is unbelievable, and I can't wait to chat to him again.
Yeah, Elliot's a tidal wave of momentum, a tidal wave of, you know, thought-provoking insight, and where we were 10 months ago on that episode one, and where we are today, our momentum is growing, and it's just going to be more exciting. You know, we fine-tuned, we got a little more polish, yeah. And we get to deliver this product for you guys again.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm really looking forward to this. The fact that, you know, we're still in our infancy. We're very much babies, so we're always looking to improve. I don't think I'm an expert at anything. So I think this interview, second time around, will be even better. I thought we did some great things in episode one, but I think episode two will be a lot stronger. So look out for some key messages in this one, guys.
I totally agree. You know, it's all about, you know, providing a platform and the safest space possible for our guests to deliver their message. And the second time around is always easier, in my opinion, because we've already done this dance once.
Yeah, definitely. Building that rapport and that relationship building is something I highly recommend to people.
You're really good at it. The networking, relationship building. That's, dude, you know, we could talk a whole episode on that, but, you know, I don't want to go on a rant, but that is huge, man. Building those networks, positive networks, building trust, and then maintaining the relationship. It's huge, man. Things that you do really well.
Yeah, thank you, man. So do you.
Thank you, brother. Tristan Cannell in the house, baby.
All right. While we're thanking people, thank you out there listening to the show. Really appreciate all the messages of support. What's really big lately has been all the iTunes reviews. So if you haven't done that yet, quickly jump on iTunes, leave us that 5-star review. Helps us grow, helps us bring our message to more and more people.
Yeah, man. And all the new messages we're getting and all the new inboxes, all the guys and girls who are just tuning in, man, we can't name you all, but all collectively, we say thank you. And everyone who's been supporting this since episode one, we say thank you. And just keep bringing it. We'll keep bringing it for you.
Hell yeah. So, guys, continue to support us, and we'll continue to support you. But in the meantime, Elliot Hulse. All right, guys, our special guest is Elliot Hulse. Elliot is the founder of Strength Camp in St. Petersburg, Florida. Elliot is a former professional strongman, one of the most viewed creators of content on YouTube, while also recently turning his focus towards meditation and also publishing the book named The King. After appearing on episode 52 of the Vision Board Podcast, we are extremely pleased to get him back on. Elliot, welcome back to the show, my man.
Thank you.
Elliot, like Tristan aforementioned, we had you on roughly 90 episodes ago. A lot's changed on our part. We've been paying attention to you. I just want to say congrats on the 10-year anniversary of Strength Camp. And can you share with our fans a little insight on what's going down in Ackworth, Georgia?
Huh. Thank you so much for that. Congratulations. 10 years. Yeah. I started Strength Camp in 2007. And I couldn't have imagined the roller coaster ride that would have ensued for the next 10 years. But to answer your question, we're expanding. So Strength Camp started it out of the back of my van, training people with sandbags and tires in the parks, city parks here in St. Pete. And we opened up our first affiliate location. So now we'll have a Strength Camp in Georgia. We'll have two more in Florida. We'll have a couple in the UK, one on the West Coast. So that's the new venture.
Elliot, what are the main ingredients, you know, those foundations that you're trying to bring into each of the Strength Camps?
Well, Strength Camp takes a holistic approach to fitness. So I often talk about the four layers of strength. And, you know, when we train in a gym, we think in terms of one layer, right, which is the neuromuscular layer, training your muscles, you know, for strength, obviously, or for physique. But we also aim to honor the other three layers, which include physiological strength, you know, and it's as simple as our rhythms, you know, or the way we tend to our sleep patterns, our the foods we eat and when we eat them, physiology. And then the third is energetic strength, which is a bit more towards the spiritual end of things, meditation. And then the fourth layer is life mastery. And the way I like to say it is that life mastery brings it all full circle. The first three layers are about becoming the strongest version of yourself. The fourth layer is about empowering others. So that's really the foundation principle by which Strength Camp is built.
Yeah, Tristan, before we started recording, I'm currently reading Robert Greene's 48 Laws. And yeah, you mentioned life mastery. With that sort of mindset approach in terms of, you know, owning our time here, like being in control of it, being proactive about what we do, is this something that you've always been triggered on for you? Or is this like a lifelong search for you to constantly be maneuvering the way, you know, how to succeed in this life?
Life is dynamic. It's not linear, in other words. A lot of times we get into our business or we get into our professions thinking, well, I'm at A and I'm going to get to B. I'm going to take this straight line, this path, this road towards it. But it's never ending, because once you get to B, then there's C, then D, and E, and F. And there's no actually making it. There's no actually getting anywhere. There's being present for what's available now in order to make the right decisions about what's coming next.
Yeah. Last time we had you on, you left me with, we were talking about Osho, and you were talking about the redreaming state. And this was, like I said, 90 episodes ago. And I've kept that with me. There was that little explanation you were talking about. Everything that at that moment in your life that you had done that defied you, that made up who Elliot Hulse was, you had now to let that go. And it's kind of like, you know, you brought up the weights and the books and you're giving things away. And I wanted to ask you, like, now, 9-10 months later, is this still something that you're practicing, that you keep with you?
Man, I think it's so awesome that we have a record, right? Like, we recorded an interview 9 months ago.
Yeah, man.
I have videos from 2007, 10 years ago, before Strength Camp was even formed. So we can always go back and look at the path and see where we've come from and where we're going and how rapidly things evolve. Because it's crazy to know that our conversation 9 months ago, when we had our conversations, I probably didn't have Strength Camp International, which is a new company that we formed.
Sure.
I probably didn't have Strength Camp Media, which is another company I formed in order to continue publishing my own work but to publish others. We're publishing some really powerful people this year. And I probably didn't have Grounding Camp. And Grounding Camp I started in 2016 as a way to promote Osho Active Meditations. Oh. So in those 9 months,
wow.
There has been a tremendous amount of blossoming. So it's always funny to see and hear that in retrospect.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Strength Camp Media.
I started out as a personal trainer at a fitness gym like most trainers do. And I decided I wanted to branch out onto my own. And, you know, there's that whole journey there. But while I started discovering marketing, you know, this is 2006, 2005, and Google was kind of a new thing. And I realized that if I was going to get people to hire me, you know, when I left the fitness gym, right, because I was going out on my own and I had to market, I couldn't afford billboards. I can afford $5,000-$10,000 for a freaking billboard. So I decided I ought to study this internet marketing stuff, right? I think people are going to be going to Google to find personal trainers in the future. So let me put some eggs in that basket. So as I was studying internet marketing in order to promote my personal training services, I discovered that there were people creating digital products. I was buying digital products. Mm. I was buying ebooks. I was buying video courses online in order to learn internet marketing. And of course, through that, I learned that that's a business too. Taking your ideas, your expertise, putting it into a PDF or putting it into a book or putting it on video or audios, and then selling them online is a business. And of course, you know, it's called digital publishing. Back then, that was a brand new concept also. So as I grew Strength Camp with the marketing, the local marketing that I learned from studying internet marketing, I also discovered that online publishing was a thing. And I went to work right away. As soon as I started getting clients and building Strength Camp, I went to work right away writing books. And it's a good thing I did so, because shortly after I started Strength Camp in 2007, the housing market crashed in 2008. And it was difficult for anybody to have business, much less a startup, you know, out of the back of my van. So selling ebooks kind of floated me throughout the early stages of my career until YouTube blew up, and then, you know, things took a different course. But this year, over the past few year or 2 years, as I'm re-dreaming, like you described, I decided to take my passion and ability to publish online and turn it into Strength Camp Media, where we now have a team in order to do this more efficiently, faster, and for other people. So we're, you know, like I said, we'll be publishing others, and, you know, not just my stuff, but we'll be publishing other fitness experts in the coming months as well.
Yeah. What were the major influences? Because I've heard you speak before about guys like Zach Evanesh and Joe DeFranco and Jada Faruja having big influences you on, like, probably the strength and conditioning side of things. What about on the business side of things? Who are some of those major influences?
The first major influence with regard to entrepreneurship and fitness is my uncle Elroy, who, when I was 14 years old, he showed up in our living room. He didn't live with us, but he showed up one day carrying a bag, duffel bag, where he had like exercise clothing and equipment. He had some things. And he explained to my parents that I quit my accounting job because now I'm going into business for myself, teaching people how to exercise. This was in 1994. So it wasn't even a thing yet. And I was in such awe of the fact that not only is my uncle a badass because he's a bodybuilder and he has taught me how to lift and is a champion in that way, but now he has taken his business into his own hands. That was the first time I saw someone do that. Nobody in my family did that. You know, my parents are I'm a first generation American. My parents came here and worked their faces off. My uncle decided that wasn't for me. I'm going to work for myself. So he was my first inspiration. And then when it comes to learning business and marketing, I was lucky enough to come across Dan Kennedy. And Dan Kennedy is an old school direct response marketer who teaches principles. You know, today there's so much. You can learn from so many people. But when studying Dan Kennedy to me is like going to the horse's mouth. And I was lucky enough to learn the principles of direct response marketing from his books and courses.
Elliot, being like a, you know, if we were to say visionary in terms of, you bring up Google 10 years ago, you had the wherewithal to understand that and utilize that to your advantage, the YouTube videos, selling the ebooks, you know, when the economy was a little down. Where, if you had to look ahead now, and we're speaking strictly on the fitness industry, where technology is evolving and, you know, a lot of people were saying one-on-one training's dead or whatever that may be, where do you see the industry going forward, or maybe some white spaces in the market for coaches looking to break through?
Man, it's funny because the pendulum swings. Mm. And I think the pendulum is swinging faster and faster during this day and age. Mm. And, you know, for us to have seen the pendulum in fitness this swing from one-on-one to CrossFit groups, you know, group training, I am sensing the return of one-on-one expertise. I think that because there's been such a proliferation of quote-unquote knowledge, meaning everybody can do whatever they want to do because all they got to do is watch a YouTube video about it, read a couple blog posts, and all of a sudden they're an expert. Yep, we got all these half experts, half baked experts out there doing all this work, and you know a lot of them are making a lot of money because they're pretty people and they know how to market. But when it boils down to it, they're not actually an expert.
Yeah.
And I think in the coming era, 8 days ahead, that's going to be exposed, and people are going to pay premium for true expertise. And they're going to get tired of the, you know, the flash in the pan, wannabe expert.
Yeah. Elliot, are you doing much one-on-one coaching anymore?
I'm moving back in that direction.
What made you take?
I have Strength Camp, and Strength Camp is great, and we're growing it, and I'm banking on that working well because, you know, it's there's a spectrum there, and so getting fitness in front of a lot of people, like I mentioned CrossFit before. CrossFit's great. CrossFit takes a shit in some people's minds because it's not as specific as it needs to be for the individual sometimes. But CrossFit is amazing because it spread fitness like a virus into communities, into populations, people who would otherwise have never done it. So the value is there. Things expand before they consolidate. And so Strength Camp, the expansion wave is still spreading. You know, there are untapped countries that don't even have the internet yet. So that's going to continue to happen. But at the same time, like with the pendulum swinging backwards and coming back, I like to think of myself as ahead of the curve sometimes. And so Strength Camp will continue to ride the wave out. But Elliot Hulse is creeping back towards the where the momentum I assume is going.
Yeah, man. I love what you did a video recently, and you know, I'm a coach and I love helping people. And in this video you said coaches are king. Coaches are kings. Mm. Man, that has so much power to it. I wanted to ask you, what could you give us some key attributes you feel where you are so you know, evolved in your brand and as a coach that are key components of being a great coach?
Well, I'll approach it from the king perspective. Right? Because coaches are kings. Coaches do what kings do. In order to coach, you have to be the thing. In order to be a good coach, you have to actually have what it is that you're offering people. Right? It's like you know, going to a dentist with rotten teeth. Going to a you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Although, you know what, we're so disconnected these days that we do. We go to fat doctors. You know, how many times do you go to a doctor who's obese is going to tell, he's taking care of my health. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So for a coach to be a true coach, and I, in the fitness industry, because it's so visual, it has to be this way. And it's good because the proof is in the pudding. You have to be fit. You're not going to last if you're not. So the first attribute to being a king, which is commensurate with being a coach, is order or integrity, alignment. So kings bring order to the realm. But order is a matter of internal order, alignment or integrity. You are the thing. We're not selling an idea. We're not selling a concept. We're not selling a hope and dream. We're literally offering what we are. I'm not going to give you advice that I wouldn't take myself. That's the first order of things. So to truly be a king, to truly be a coach in that way, you be the thing to have the power, as Ralph Waldo Emerson would say. That's one half of it. I like to say that's, you know, half of the mission. Become the strongest version of yourself. Be in alignment. Be in integrity. The second half of the equation, the second half of the mission, I even mentioned it before, is to empower others. The other thing that kings do is bless. Order and blessing. Order and generativity. So as you order your kingdom, as you bring alignment and integrity to your life, inside and out, you can't help but be a light unto others. Your cup will be so full that it overflows. In other words, you've got enough to give to other people. And it doesn't necessarily just mean money. It could be energy. It could be health. Energy for sure. Because when you're a coach, you're giving your energy. When somebody comes into your gym, that time and that expertise, what you're offering is your energy. If someone comes to your gym and you're tired and you're low energy, you're doing a disservice to your client. So when someone is paying you or you're offering your service to them, in my terms, you're blessing them. You're offering blessings to them and blessings to the world. And as they become a stronger version of themselves through your blessings, the world becomes a stronger version of itself, because that person will go home and their family will be happy. They'll have better relationships. They'll do better in their jobs. So I don't see what we do as anything less than literally enlightening the world.
Right on.
Yeah, with all those, you know, they're pretty key principles. How do you get that across with your own coaches? Is there something that you have, like a self-development day on a weekly basis? How does that work?
It's interesting that you ask, because I just got finished editing the 7th video in a series that I created to have them watch and study throughout the years. You know, I've created a curriculum. When we created the ambassador program for people to take strength camps into their own cities, we invited all of our new ambassadors to strength camp, and I gave like a 3-hour talk, which went over what I just shared with you with regard to kings being coaches, coaches being kings, is one part of. And so I'm doing my best to break that up into videos so that there are lessons. I'll probably transcribe it, turn it into a manual, because the message has to be repeated over and over and over again.
Elliot, next weekend I'm embarking on my second cleanse. It's a are you familiar with the combo?
No.
So it's the Amazonian shamanic. It's the monkey frog, the tricolor Medusa frog, and what they do is they put it on your skin, and it's a purge, and your liver, your kidneys, your gallbladder detoxes or flushes through water loading. And, you know, it's kind of a heavy, heavy experience. You do it with a shaman, and they take you through this journey. These sort of things, you know, I see that, like, for a guy like myself, where I'm at in my own journey, when you're like on the forefront of being really open about developing yourself, getting out of your comfort zone, doing these sort of things, whether it's meditation, floating, we'll get to the ice baths in a second. Is this something that you constantly strive to do?
Let me put it this way. It's what's happening. A generation ago, a conversation like this wouldn't exist. I mean, we didn't even have the internet so that ideas like this could be spread.
Yeah.
It's what's happening. So by you being open-minded, you're just riding the wave. You're taking in the light. We're waking up. Some people choose to remain asleep, and some people can't help but to be awoken by the tremendous light that's being spread throughout the planet. And when I say light, I'm talking in terms of consciousness, waking up, knowledge. For you to be playing with frogs to cleanse your body in the Amazon is a crazy idea. But I would have explained that to even when I was 10 years ago, if I were to say that to someone, like, yeah, I'm going to go to the Amazon, I'm going to do this cleanse, and they're using this frog. And it would just sound like I'm speaking a different language. You're saying it now, and I guarantee a lot of the people listening to this, and myself included, are like, yeah, okay, well, I mean, yeah, it sounds like what people are doing.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What's going on right now.
Yeah.
All right, sticking in the kink subject, I really want to ask you about your book, Elliot, because it's already sold out. It's creating waves around the internet everywhere. Can you just give us a little bit of insights on to how you created this book, why, and the intent behind it?
Why I wrote the book was because I was a publisher. I was able to put food on the table before YouTube and before Strength Camp took off, because I created information products. And when my YouTube videos took off, I put all my eggs in that basket and dropped everything else. I stopped writing. I stopped blogging. I stopped writing emails. I didn't, you know, so I wasn't creating anything except YouTube. You know, we have a limited amount of creative energy, and that's where I put all of my energy. But as I decided to step down from that place where I was with YouTube, I wanted to consolidate the essence of everything I was hoping to teach in my videos in one place. So that's where King came about. It's structured in four layers, like I mentioned at the start of the show, because I take a holistic approach to this. You know? So there's a chapter on the neuromuscular strength, physiological strength, energetic strength, and life mastery. The first part, neuromuscular strength, I invited at the time, he was one of my coaches, and then he helped me with my videos, and really my protege and my right-hand man, Chris Barnard, who's now my partner at Strength Camp, to contribute that part of the book. So you'll read his words as it relates to training people and how we do it at Strength Camp. And then the subsequent three parts go into some of the principles that I was hoping to share through my videos that are just now in one package, in one book where you can read it.
And Elliot, who's this book for? Who's your best suit?
I wrote it for my fans. It's funny that you asked that, because I thought about that today. I was like, who is King? Why did I make that? Why did I put that together?
Yeah.
And I didn't put it together to be a New York Times bestseller. Yeah. Otherwise, I would have put it on Amazon. I didn't write it for any of the typical reasons why people might, you know, want to publish a book. You know, it was self-published. And I wrote it because I wanted my fans to have something that represented what the essence of what attracted them to my videos.
Elliot, me and Johnny, we both watched an amazing video with you and Wim Hof the other day, man. That looked like an amazing experience. Can you take us through that a little bit?
Well, I was in Europe to begin with. I was in Berlin studying with Krasana and Ali, who were two very good friends and teachers of mine. And we were doing 21 days of active dynamic meditation at their studio in Berlin. They're incredible people, and I've learned a lot from them. So I decided to spend a month in Berlin with them, as it supports my ability to do grounding camp, one of my new businesses, that much better. While I was there, I was contacted. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but somebody put us together. Actually, I think it was John Duquesne, who published one of Wim Hof's books, asked me to review it. And that's how we connect. I connected with his son. And so I figured while I was in Europe, why not? You know, why not go? Wim Hof, I've seen some of what he does and what he says. And he's a very passionate guy. And I thought it was incredible. His breathing techniques are very similar to what I've been speaking about for years when I tell people to breathe into their balls. Yeah. And I see the value of the cold water training. I tried it a little bit. And I was like, man, I can see. Because when you get into ice cold water, you can't help but breathe deep. I can tell you to breathe deeper. I can try to teach you how to breathe, but I could just, if I throw you into a ice bath, you're going to breathe.
Yeah.
So I saw the value of it. So I had an opportunity while I was there to link up with him. We ended up making videos in a very non-traditional way. It kind of unfolded that way. When I got there, Wim was energetic and he was talking and he was willing and wanting to just share so much that I just kind of kept quiet the entire time. And we did our best to capture the essence of what he was trying to say. You know, these were the guys that filmed it weren't my camera guys. They were guys that I met in Europe. And to capture us going into ice water. It was really the essence of it.
Yeah, there was the one thing that I noticed. I was watching, you know, when I watched that video a couple times, is watching your physical reactions when he was teaching and like you guys were doing the dance and the breathing techniques. Was that initially because you're the coach, you know, you're the king, you're the coach's king, and you're that front leader? Was it tough for you to sit back and take and be the student in that scenario a little bit?
I loved it. I loved every minute of not having to talk. I was not compelled to see. This is the other thing I recognize too, that all of the videos that people have made with him, I think in general there's too much talking going on. Just in general, I think that everybody is just blabbering. I am the king of blabbering too. You know, I spent a lot of time making YouTube videos, and in my redreaming phase, I'm more interested in providing context rather than content. I don't make very many videos anymore. I try to show people what's going on, and in a fly on the wall kind of way, and that was the way the video came out. But I was ready to be quiet. You could say humility was a part of it, and I was humble, but it wasn't even a conscious decision. I was there in Europe doing meditation. I had already been through like 16 or 17 days straight of aggressive active meditation. When I say that, I mean like 2-3 times a day sometimes. I was in a very receptive place. That much active meditation, I was just available. I was just open. I was just there. I don't want to say I was pure, but it was as pure as I could possibly be. And when I showed up, I just took it all in rather than having to, you know, control or force anything.
Have you sit back? Have you watched it? Because correct me if I'm wrong, there was this moment, and you were right, the whole video, your whole experience that they captured of you, you were like this really inquisitive younger child version of yourself. But when you were there was a moment in the water where you were unleashing these like primal, like lion-esque roars, and you stopped and you looked at him and you linked eyes, and I felt that you made him uncomfortable a little bit with your with the presence. Did you catch that at all, or was that just me?
Maybe he was uncomfortable. It looked
like,
know.
Yeah. I think you said something like, he said something like, strong love, I can feel it. And you looked at him and you were like, I love you. And I just felt like, holy shit, Elliot's like, it looked like you made him uncomfortable, but it was a cool experience.
Hey man, love is uncomfortable, but it's where we're going. You know how the pendulum's swinging? We're moving away from the head and into the heart. In the future, the heart, we will think with our heart and feel with our head.
Elliot, I'll actually just sticking on this topic, and Johnny just bringing up the video and just seeing your actual reactions. That first minute when you actually got into the water, how uncomfortable was that?
I was totally prepared for it.
Yeah?
I had been, like I said, I had been doing active meditation for the past few weeks, so my breathing was very open.
Yeah.
You can't go in there with closed breathing.
Mm.
So and the way I use bioenergetic breathing, the way we do bioenergetic breathing is with an open mouth. So he didn't prepare me. I had never done this, or it wasn't like we eased our way into it. He just said, hey, hop in. So I was like, okay. And I knew I needed to breathe. So I just opened up my capacity to breathe, and I could have stayed in there another 10 minutes. You know, he was ready to get out because I guess maybe he was getting bored, but I could have stayed there much longer.
Was it also cold? Because you said you were in Europe. So was it also cold on the outside as well?
Yeah, it was cold, man. Ooh. It's Amsterdam.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. Could you share with our fans, maybe drop some knowledge bombs? Because the breathing, we hear that a lot, you know, playing sport, being a coach, they say breathe in, but could you share some like benefits of what it's doing to the body when your body is like in that shock phase, inflamed, and you're taking those deep breaths? What's it actually doing for the body?
I will tell you what is not happening to your body when you're not breathing. So I'll go from the negative approach.
Mm.
When our breathing is stifled, it is because we are repressing emotion. We've learned this. This is the response to dealing with threats in our environment that began when we were children. And you know this is true because you can look at an angry person and you can tell by the way their muscular system is contorted. Their eyes and eyebrows look a certain way. Their jaw gets very tight. Shoulders begin to hike up. Hands begin to clench. You can even see when someone is in love or someone's about to cry. It's all very written on the muscular system because emotion expression happens through the muscular system. When we suppress the expression that would naturally be a response to, you know, threat, to whatever it is in our environment, even laughter, oftentimes we suppress joy. My first experience of releasing muscular tension through deep breathing, I laughed for 10 minutes straight and I couldn't stop. So there's a lot of repressed joy, good feelings also. So what you're not experiencing by holding yourself in these neurotic holding patterns, or like Wilhelm Reich described them as muscular armoring, you're not accessing your true, your intelligence, your bodily intelligence. You're constipated, you're stuck, so you're stifled. So not only are you not breathing, but you're not feeling. It's a way to basically castrate yourself. When we do finally open up the capacity to breathe, there is often a flood of emotions that come to the surface that people either don't know how to deal with. So, you know, it might not even come that far. Or if you're in the presence of someone like myself who has experienced bioenergetics, or someone like Wim Hof, who teaches it in his way, we would help support you in processing those emotions, those repressed emotions. With bioenergetics and active meditation, there's a lot of catharsis. There's a lot of yelling, you know. And you don't have to tell someone to yell. You get them to breathe, and you push one button and all the yelling comes, all the crying comes, all the laughter comes. There's not a doing, it's spontaneous. It just happens. On the other end, that's how I approach it through bioenergetics. With what I have experienced and what I come to understand, what I think I understand with the cold water stuff that Wim Hof is doing, is that when you get into the water, that deep breathing takes fold. He likes to teach people how to breathe before they get into the water, so which is a very good idea. That deep breathing takes fold, but associated, in order to continue to breathe that deeply in ice cold water, you can't hold tension in your muscles. The minute you try to tighten your muscles in order to suppress your breathing, number one, you won't breathe. Number two, you probably cramp up. So the muscles have to relax. The muscle, when you get into that ice cold water, there's not a whole lot of muscular armoring going on. There's complete relaxation of the muscle, of the neurotic holding patterns of the muscular system, just so you can survive. So that's my understanding as of today and how the two relate.
Actually, an interesting thing that you actually brought up when we spoke, 9 months ago now, that this was the fact that you weren't using barbells at the time, Elliot. I've seen recently, I think you coming back to that. So I just wanted to see how, with everything with the breathing, meditation, and also bringing back the barbell, how has that affected your lifestyle?
It's a great question, and that's exactly what I'm in the laboratory doing as we speak. That's my work today, because the bioenergetics is designed to get the muscular system to relax. When you release that emotion, you're no longer carrying the demons that are trapped in your body that keep you twitching. You know, you watch people, they're so uncomfortable. They're twitching and biting their jaw and clenching their jaw and all the, you know, the things that are indicative of you holding yourself back. When you go under the barbell, when you go and lift weights, you're putting tension in your muscles also. It's an extrinsic stimulation, right? So if I'm lifting, it's the resistance is on the outside. But it does the same thing to the muscular system as the resistance associated with holding back emotions. So resistance leads to tension in the muscular system. I have found that when I start weightlifting, my breathing, I become more anxious. I become more high strung. I become less relaxed because the muscles are tense. That's why foam rolling is so important. Corrective stretching is so important. Massage is so important. I spent 2 hours with my therapist yesterday getting a lot of work done on my legs. There has to be, and what I'm discovering and what I'm aiming to provide and experience myself, is that there has to be a balance between the yin and yang aspects of your training, just like there's a night and day, just like there's an up and down, just like there's a negative and positive, a male and female. The activities that we engage in need to be balanced in their yin, or their soft, or their yielding, or their dark, or their earthly way. And then we also need the yang, the fire, the hot, the heat, the aggressive. Tender and aggressive is what I like to say. You got to be tender aggressive. Alpha males are the tender aggressive ones. They're not forcing it like the premature ejaculator, but they're not limp like the impotent. There is a tenderness and an aggression there. So that practically looks like tending to both by strength training and also doing yoga, by sprinting and doing jumps, but also doing deep breathing and bioenergetics. So I'm trying to find the sweet spot between the two that gives us a, you know, I don't want to, if you go too far in either end of the spectrum, you go too far, you end up in balance. You end up like the, no judgment against anyone, but, you know, like the hyper-flexible, super skinny vegan yoga guy, which is, hey, that's one archetype. That's cool. I mean, that's, you committed. Great. Or, you know, the complete meathead who he can't even turn his head without having to rotate his entire body, and who everything to him is, you know, he's on that other far end of the yin spectrum. That's a miserable place to be also.
Elliot, you're a fiery guy, man. Like you talked about, like 9 months ago, so much has changed in your life. You know, the book, the media group. Are you writing? Like, are you planning that, or is this just a culmination of your work? Like, how you keep doubling down. Like, what is it going to look like in a year from now? Is this something that you're planning and strategizing, or are you allowing it to manifest itself naturally?
Just like there's yin and yang, brother, there's allowing and doing. And I'm in a place of watching it unfold. I'm allowing it to unfold, but at the same time setting my intentions. I mean, I guess that's how we do it in life mastery. We set our intentions. We have our intentions, but we're not attached to them. We don't make them happen. I think one of the biggest curses that we've adopted and shared, and maybe I've perpetuated, is that we have to crush it. We have to grind it. We got to go get it.
Yeah.
And that's done nothing but make people more anxious. It's done nothing but make people compare themselves to others more. And I don't believe that it's helped us be any happier. The way I operate these days is to be very clear about what it is that I want. And then in the allowing it to unfold, I put myself into a receptive place in order to see the path unfold in front of me. You got to be very sensitive in order to this to happen. See, a lot of people, they're not as in touch with their bodies, their hearts, their intuition to allow this process to happen. So it sounds crazy from someone like me who says this. But if I show it to you in practical terms, to see it in practical terms, just watch my videos over the span of 10 years or listen to the conversation we had about how the past 9 months have been evolved for me. But I can give you a very simple and immediate example of that. I am wanting to build something. I'm wanting land, and I'm wanting to build a retreat center. I haven't revealed that to too many people, but that's what's on its way. That's what's happening. So that's not here yet. What is here are all the signs leading me there. And so for the past few months, I have been silent enough to hear and obedient enough to follow the small promptings that little by little get me to where that is going, where it unfolds. It's not even like the things that I'm doing make that happen. I'm watching it unfold by paying attention to the actions that need to be taken in order to support the process. When I use that word action, it's very important because there's a very big difference between activity and action. And most of us get caught up in activity. Activity comes from a place of anxiety. Activity comes from a place of needing to make it happen. Action comes from silence and stillness, like a cat, right? A cat is still, and that's why he can explode so quickly when it's time to take action. When you're still enough to hear your heart, and I'm talking about myself and how I allow this to, how I practice this, I literally sit on my couch. I have a couch in my kitchen. I literally sit on my couch, and I am still. I am silent. I'm not doing anything, and it just comes to me what to do next. An idea just pops into my head. One idea that pops into my head, that is directly related to building a retreat center is I needed to clean my garage. Now, I could show you all the way all the dots come together, but that's not the point. The point is that I was sitting there and I realized I need to clean out my garage and I need to find a place. I have four children, six bikes. I need to clean up my garage and I need to get a bike rack to put all the kids' bikes on. That is directly related to the unfolding of a retreat center. It's not making the retreat center happen. It's listening to and following the still small voice within that says, if you clean up the garage, you can start picking up exercise equipment. You can fill the garage with exercise equipment that you ultimately use in the little gym that you're going to build for. And then when you've got enough of what you need there, you can move it into a bigger place. And you can build another thing. And so I'm just excited to watch it unfold while I do seemingly unrelated things like clean my fucking garage.
That's awesome. That's
very interesting. Do you schedule little time periods for like creativity thought? Because I saw that you just finished reading Craig Ballantyne's Perfect Day Formula and you became a little bit more structured. So my question was, how's that going? And back to my first question is, do you schedule little time periods for those creative moments?
Yeah, I have to do it intermittently throughout my workday. I don't know how people just sit down and work for 8 hours straight. I schedule in, like, so for example, today, I spent a lot of time writing today. And in between my writing blocks, I went out in the backyard and sat in the sun. Figure I can get a little bit of vitamin D while I'm meditating. And like I said before, with regard to sitting at the couch in my living room and my kitchen, I just sat. I just sat and absorbed the sun, absorbed the rays, absorbed the light. So I schedule those. My exercise, my yoga, my meditation, my sunshine time, they take up almost an obnoxious amount of time on my schedule. People think I don't do anything.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
5.
Is that intentional? Do you go to sleep very early in the night?
I go to bed by 8:30, 8:39.
Oh, wow. And how long have you been doing that for?
It's been oncoming for about a year. I've just been progressively going to bed earlier and earlier and getting up earlier and earlier. It's just been natural.
And does the whole household follow you the same thing?
Hell no. I have teenage kids.
I was going to ask. I know you got 5 kids.
Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and the kids, they don't want to go to sleep. So, no, I'm the boring one. I'm the one that's in bed before everybody.
Do they ask you very many questions about strength camp? Are they interested yet?
Not so much. They know that... they know that their dad's famous, because people come up and ask for pictures all the time. The kids are in YouTube, so they know. But it's interesting that they don't. What's unfolding also is me bringing my work into my home. That's a part of how this whole thing's unfolding. So as my kids are getting older, I want them to see me training. I want them to be there to know that this is what dad does. Dad lifts, and this is how he lifts, and this is why he lifts, and this is what he knows. This is my father's profession. This is my father's expertise. They don't really know my expertise that well. So I will be building a gym in my house, in my office, in my house. I want my work and my family to be one thing. I don't see the benefit of having them be different parts of my life.
Mm. Actually, one question I wanted to ask you was, Elliot, what do you think the key is to building strong relationships? Because I see from the outside looking in, you and Colleen have been childhood sweethearts. You've got 5 children. As you did mention, you're famous. Everyone loves you on YouTube. You just seem to have that knack to building great relationships. What's the keys behind that?
I can't say that I'm great at building relationships or establishing relationships. Let me put it that way. It's the type of relationships. It's funny, 3 or 4 years ago, a friend of mine hired a spiritual business coach, and he was raving about him. So I was like, all right, so I'll do a session with him. And we did this assessment, so he has to assess you first. And there are these categories, there are like maybe like 13 categories. And he gives you a score based on, you know, his reading of you for each of these categories. One of the categories is relationships. And within the relationship category, there are like 9 other subcategories. In the subcategory of long-term committed relationships, I score super high. And my life has been a byproduct of that. My business partner was one of my clients. He's been with me for 8 years. And I could only see the future being brighter with the two of us growing in our relationship, growing as individuals, and growing our business. I married my high school girlfriend. We started dating when I was 14. I've got a long-term relationship there. I seem to have a knack for that. When it comes to another type of relationship, I'm kind of retarded. He said that you're almost at the level of dumb when it comes to my relationship towards institutions. And it's interesting because I've been a libertarian and just anti-establishment. I hated school. I didn't want a job. Anything that smells like an institution, I'm like averted by, or naturally averted by. I've been growing out of that lately, though. So I don't have the keys to relationships in general, but as far as long-term committed relationships are concerned, and particularly as it relates to the opposite sex or my relationship with my wife, I would say one of the keys, because there are many keys, I'd say one of the keys is honoring the other as an individual rather than an object. A lot of times we have these love object relationships. A lot of times we think we love someone, but we really love the idea of them. She's hot, or she cooks well, or we get along, we like the same things, or, well, we have a baby together. That's loving the idea of someone. When you actually love the individual, you love their farts, you love their warts, you love their flaws. You love when they piss you off. You see, you love every aspect of them. You love their inadequacies, the things that they're unsure about themselves in. So when you love someone, you just love all of them, dark and light.
Wow, thank you for sharing that with Elias. That's quite profound. Okay, to finish off the interview, we've got a personality round that we've just started introducing into our interviews. Johnny's got the first question, buddy.
Elliot Halls, if 3 of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
They'd probably laugh at me first. They'd probably laugh. Oh my God, they'd say how crazy I am. And then they would probably start crying, because they would acknowledge how my craziness has brought so much joy into their lives.
That's beautiful.
All right, next one. We're going to take you back to your childhood. Elliot, what posters did you have on your childhood bedroom wall?
I had a Daryl Strawberry poster. Ooh. Yeah, I had a Daryl Strawberry poster, and I had a Budweiser bikini model poster on my wall. I remember those two most vividly.
Yeah, ESPN's got a great 30 for 30 on Daryl Strawberry.
Strawberry and yeah. Gooden and the yep. New York Mets. Yeah, yeah, man, those guys were rock stars. All right, Elliot.
Yeah, 1980s.
Yeah, they won the World Series. They were like rock stars, just partying. What would you, could you give us some advice, some of our listeners at home, you know, advice on bad days, advice on somebody struggling through some bad times right now, maybe listening. What advice would you give them?
I'd say congratulations. Congratulations. And the tougher it is, the harder it is, the more challenging it is. I got off the Skype with a young man yesterday who discovered he had brain cancer just a few days ago, 26 years old, and they cut his head open and they had to take it out. It came out of nowhere. And the first thing I said to him was congratulations. Congratulations, because with every cloud is a silver lining. And it's not that that's a nice saying. That's the way it works. Just like the yin and the yang, the day and the night, with every bad, there's the inherent seed for its goodness. You just have to be able to reframe and see how this seeming darkness is leading to the to increased light in your life. You can't have a joyful, wonderful, highly evolved life if you don't have some struggles, just like you can't have a strong, big, beautiful body, big muscles, rippling muscles in the gym if you don't beat the shit out of yourself with the barbell. You go to the gym to break yourself down. That's a hard thing to do. You're tearing your tissues apart. Science has shown that there are micro tears. You're literally abusing yourself. Why would somebody go to the effort of abusing themselves in the gym to have that breakdown happen, that degradation of the integrity of your tissue happen? The reason why is because we know that it is necessary for that breakdown to happen in order for the buildup, for the anabolic process to take hold. It's the same way in every aspect of your life. When things are going hard, when you hit the ground hard, you're bound to bounce up higher. I feel sorry for those poor souls who never have any challenges. Most of the time it's self-imposed because they're too afraid to do anything that brings challenges. Or the challenges just happen upon them because they haven't taken any action in their lives. It's like God forcing you to grow up. So when someone's having challenges in their life, I see it as the first step in an evolution they're about to have. Congratulations.
Thank you for that, Elliot Hulse. Man, I just want to say, every 9 months we get to sit down for an hour and pick your brain, and you're so selfless and give us so much. So, man, thanks for stopping by the show again, bro.
It was fun. Thanks.
Before we let you go, everyone at home, please get following Elliot Hulse at www.elliothulse.com. Across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, he's on the same channel. YouTube, you can catch him on Strength Camp and Elliot Said What. Elliot, my man, I couldn't say much more than what Johnny said. Thank you so much for sharing the space with us, man. And hopefully we'll get you back on the show for part three, my man.
Sounds good. You guys have a great one.
Thanks, man. Be good.
Johnny, that was Elliot Hulse, man.
Yeah, man. It's all, you know, you sit down with a guy like Elliot Hulse and his energy, you can't be anything but compelled to tune in. And, you know, this is an attribute to what he brings to the table. Every time I interview Elliot, I walk away, like, you know, tired because it's, you know.
There's a lot to take in.
He gives you so much.
There's not many people with that sort of body energy that just radiates through his voice. And you could tell he commands a presence.
Yeah. The eyes, too.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I think that guy's listening, if you're living under a rock and you haven't seen his YouTube videos yet. But that's the one he connects with those eyes of his, and then his voice and his inflection, and it's good to see. You know, he's a busy dude. He's doing so much stuff. So that it's always a pleasure to talk to a dude like that, man.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's great. We'll wrap up on Friday about it, but I really want to go into kind of like to continue evolution. Like it doesn't matter where you are, to continue evolving. I think that's what Elliot really does. You know, he's been successful for 15 years now, but it just
started out of his van.
Yeah, seems year after year he just kind of finds a way to take a step up the ladder. He's probably a good analogy because I don't know
like
what he's
doubling down or leveling up. It's like he's not, I guess the origin of that is probably not being complacent.
Yeah,
you know, that inner intrinsic feeling to want to keep providing more and more and more.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But let's talk about that into more depth on Friday. But next week, guys, Frank Shamrock, Ken Shamrock, it's gonna be Shamrock week for the fight fans out there, or even just, you know, people that aren't interested in fighting. I think it's going to be great perspectives into the minds of two brothers.
That's it, man. And these guys were the original Diaz brothers in terms of being raised on the streets, street fighting.
Yeah.
These guys paved the way. These guys are pioneers. You know, there'd be no Diaz brothers if there weren't the Shamrocks.
Yeah, in the 90s, these were the Conor McGregors. So
yeah, champions.
And I think we'll touch base with both of them about building a brand. And the fact was, there was only a handful of guys that really knew how to build a brand before Conor McGregor did. And these two were the guys that actually did make some money out of this because they knew they were smart.
Yeah, they're really, you're right, and we'll get into that. But they both had this ability to transcend the sport, to go out of it and then branch into, you know, you got Frank doing his thing, analyst, businesses, you got the Weed Project.
Yeah.
And you got Ken, you know, he's synonymous with still... These guys like that, man, they just have that thing they want to be giving and they want to be in front of people. And
hell yeah.
It's good to see them keep pushing.
Yeah, I can't wait. So tune in next week, but Friday wrap up. Make sure you tune in that end of the week. And if you haven't yet, Mike Vicani was on Monday. So I highly recommend you tune into that show as well.
Yeah, man. Mike V, Friday wrap up. Stay tuned.
All right, Johnny, I'll check you on Friday, man.
TK, be good.
Peace.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.